We had for the first service the video that was provided for us by Mr. David Johnson. And as you were listening, you were probably going, okay, he's not talking about today or the... It was given to us to use in several of, especially in the western part of the U.S., several of us have played that. It was given for us to play during the Holy Days, but as we listen to it, it's like it has meaning both for the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread as well as this last day. I want to continue in that story. We have touched on and looked at the Days of Unleavened Bread. We've looked at the history of coming out of Egypt, and we talked about that prior to keeping these days. We talked about that on the first holy day. I want to go back to the book of Exodus. I want to look at this story as it continues, because there are particular parts of this story that give us something that we need for today, the last day of unleavened bread. Exodus chapter 11, beginning at verse 1. Exodus 11 and verse 1. I'm going to read from the New King James. It says, "The Lord said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt." We listened to that in the first message, listening to the story of how that took place and what was going on. But he said, "I'm going to bring one more plague, and afterward he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether." It's going to make him so upset to the point that he says, "I want you out." And he did. As we heard earlier, at first he said, "No, you can't take your animals, and you can only go for a limited time. Afterward, he will let you go from here." It's an interesting phrase. That final plague on Egypt brought freedom for the children of Israel. They were let go, and as it says, Pharaoh let them go from there. We have just finished 7 days of unleavened bread. It started with the Passover, night to be much observed, first holy day, and now here we are on the final day of this festival, final message. It's hard to believe that we're already here. It's hard to believe that we're in the afternoon service of the Days of Unleavened Bread, and it's coming to a close. What did we gain? Did you learn something new during the Days of Unleavened Bread? Did you learn something about yourself during the examination process, during the Days of Unleavened Bread, as we continue to be unleavened ourselves? Did you learn something about your nature? At the Passover, Jesus Christ read or gave to them promises. We read this ourselves at the Passover. But he gave them promises to the disciples. And it was not just to the disciples then, it was promises that were given to us. So it's talking about you and I. Let's go to John chapter 14. And I know I'm jumping around here a little bit from Exodus to John. But John chapter 14... we see Christ's words to his disciples beginning in verse 18. He said, "I will not leave you orphans." He said, "I will come to you." He didn't want them to think, well, now that we've gone through the Passover, now that we know you're going to be killed, that it's over. He said, "I will not leave you orphans. I will come to you a little while longer, and the world will see me no more, but you will see me because I live. You will live also. And that day you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. He who has my commandments and keeps them..." There's a lot of people in the world who have his commandments. There are still people in the world who say, no, the Ten Commandments are valid. They uphold them, but not keep them. He says, "He who has my commandments and keeps them is he who loves me. He who loves me will be loved by the Father, and I will love him and make myself manifest to him." Judas, not Iscariot, said to him, "Lord, how is it that you will make yourself manifest to us and not to them, not to the world?" Jesus answered and said, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word." There's something we have to do. There's not just Okay, I'm not going to sin. If anyone loves me, he will keep my word. My Father will love him, and we will come and we will make our home with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words, and the word which you hear is not mine, but he said, it's the Father's who sent me. These things I have spoken to you while being present with you. The next verse we see what's coming as the next part of the plan of God. The next holy day. He said in verse 26, but the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, it will teach you all things and bring it to remembrance, all things that I said to you. Verse 27, peace I leave with you, and my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. So he is concluding his final training with his disciples, and he said, peace I leave with you. Did you have a peaceful Days of Unleavened Bread? He says in verse 28, have you heard me say to you, I am going away and coming back to you. If you loved me, you would rejoice. You would understand that I am coming back, and what I'm bringing and what I'm doing is something to rejoice about. He was saying, it's not ending. He said, if you loved me, you would rejoice because I said, I'm going to the Father, for my Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it comes, that when it comes to pass, that you may believe. I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming and has nothing in me. But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me the commandment, so do I. Arise, let us go from here. Now, we read in the Exodus that he says, I'm going to bring one final plague, and he was going to force the hand of Pharaoh, but he said, Pharaoh will let you go from here. He will let you leave. Here, after Jesus Christ had kept the Passover with his disciples, he said, arise, let us go from here. And again, after sharing this particular Passover with them, he left them with those words. And I think that's an appropriate focus for us as well, as we have come through the Days of Unleavened Bread, to focus on going from here. Let us go from here. It's not just, oh, it's over now. Now, for some, they may be going, you know, it went by too fast. I don't want it to be over. Others may be thinking, well, I'm ready for that cinnamon roll. I'm ready for a donut. I'm ready for pizza, or going to a restaurant and eating garlic breadsticks. Some went to Outback and they make that nice bread. I had to turn down the bread that comes at Outback. But to have a focus after coming through these days saying, let us go from here. There's something now, this is a springboard for moving forward and doing something, not just the holiday season has come to an end. It wasn't, well, it's all over now. And it wasn't, well, we're done with the holy day and you're going to be killed. Let's just go home now. It was a beginning. And it was a starting point for the disciples. And he says, let us go from here. There's something that is moving forward. It's present progressive. It's a starting point for things that had to occur. But it implies something. It implies that let's move forward. Now, Paul talks about that even in his life. He says, I don't want to look back at my life and all the things and the regret. He said, one thing I do know is I look forward. I look from here forward. I want to read from Henry commentary on this particular phrase where he says, arise, let us go from here. Henry commentary says, as concluding what he had said, having brought it to this, here he leaves, that the world may know that I love the Father. You shall see how cheerfully I can meet the appointed cross. Arise, let us go hence to the garden, so some, or to Jerusalem. Henry commentary was saying, they're going to go from there, but they may be going in different directions, but they're going from there. He goes on further. He said, when we talk about troubles at a distance, it's easy to say, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. But when it comes to the pinch, when an unavoidable cross lies in the way of duty, he says, to then say, arise, let us go to meet it. He knew what was ahead of him. He knew what was ahead for the disciples, although they were confused and, well, how are you going to make yourself manifest to us and not them? They didn't understand everything that was going to take place, but he was willing to go meet it. And he said, arise, let us go from here. Instead of going out of our way to miss sin or miss problems, he could have said, arise, let us do what we can to avoid this. No, he said, let us go from here. Let's meet it. Let's take this on and let's move forward. He said, it lets the world know, as he says, that we love the Father. If this discourse was at the close of the Passover supper, it should seem that these words, as he arose from the table and retired to the drawing room, where he might more freely carry on a discourse with his disciples in the following chapters and pray with them. The remarks on this is that Christ mentions that the great motive of his suffering, his Father's commandment, was in all haste to go forth and suffer and die. And again, he realized that time was becoming shorter and shorter. But he faced it. He said, let us go from here. Let us take on the challenges. Let us accept what is going to happen. And we know it was planned from the foundation of the earth. Commentary goes on. It says, arise, let us go. In these words, he is giving his disciples encouragement to follow him. He doesn't say, arise, I must go from here. He says, arise, let us go from here. Let us face the challenges that are going to come. And I found that interesting that the commentary would realize that yes, it was Jesus Christ taking on and meeting the crucifixion. But he told his disciples, let us go from here. Let us move forward. He calls them out to no hardship, but what he himself goes through before them as their leader. And they promised they would not desert him. And he said, come, let us go from here and let us see how we will make these words good. At the close of the days of unleavened bread, what is your exit plan from these days? Now, you may not be familiar with that term, an exit plan. If you're in the business world or if you're an entrepreneur, you probably are more familiar with this term of having an exit plan. Definition of an exit plan is a roadmap of information. Okay, you're exiting something that you just came through, you've learned, you've prepared. What is the exit plan? How are you going to move forward from here? So you lay out a roadmap of information. Here's where I'm going to go. Here's where I plan to go. Mr. Diaz, just in the sermon, I was talking about that, laying out steps ahead and reaching goals and setting goals in front of you, moving forward towards them. But a roadmap of information. An exit plan means a strategy. And I don't know how many of us thought, okay, Days of Unleavened Bread, I've got my strategy for this next year. But as we come out of these days, hopefully it has been a springboard to give us direction for this next year, to give us a strategy. It means a well-thought-out implementation. How am I going to implement what I have learned and what I have been through the Days of Unleavened Bread and through the Passover? So I ask, what is your exit plan from the Days of Unleavened Bread? Are you prepared for the close of these days? This evening we will end the high day and go into another Sabbath. That's something where we'll be able to spend more time together this particular weekend. But are we prepared for the close of these days and the next step? Because it's not just a close of these days and it's over. It's a close of these days and we go from here. This is a new year in God's plan. Now, at the beginning of the year on the Roman calendar year in January, people celebrate New Year's. They come up with New Year's resolutions. I resolve I'm going to do these things through the year. And again, we realize that's not God's new year, that this begins the new year for God. We should, as Christians, in the beginning of a new year, in the beginning of a year where we have renewed our commitment, renewed the covenant relationship that we have, we should resolve to continue coming out of sin, resolve to stay committed, resolve to avoid distractions or routines. Sometimes we can get into the habit of doing things over and over and not realize we've developed a routine. Sabbath attendance, staying to visit. Again, these things can sometimes, they become distractions, or we can get into the habit. We need to resolve to draw closer to the brethren. Now, we're told in Hebrews that some were forsaking the assembling of themselves together, and it was harming their relationships. We came through the Passover with the foot washing and the admonition from Jesus Christ to love one another. It's hard to do when we're not spending time with the brethren, when we're not drawing close to one another. So we need to resolve to draw closer to the brethren. Resolve to love one another. So what do we learn from observing the days of unleavened bread? What is it that you will take with you when you go from here? Is it going to be over and as soon as the Sabbath is done, then the days of unleavened bread are something that is in our minds behind us? I want to focus on some particular lessons to be learned during the days of unleavened bread. And they're lessons that help us to go from here, to take what we have learned, to have an exit plan, and to execute that, to lay out a roadmap of information of how we're going to use these days to move forward. Number one, these days are more than putting leavening out of our lives. We say, well, no, that's the main focus, is putting sin out, putting the leavening out. Let's go to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 14. Exodus 12 and verse 14. So this day shall be to you a memorial. He said, remember this day. And you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. We were talking about this earlier, talking about it at lunch while we were here. Mr. Johnson mentioned, you know, that if you miss eating it, and this came up several years ago in the church, is it a sin if you don't eat leavened bread? And of course, you have several things you have to bring into play. God says, you shall eat unleavened bread. And we shall. We should. That is the purpose. And we want to have a reminder that we're eating something unleavened for the spiritual aspects that we learn from it. And we should eat something unleavened. And if we eat it, it has to be unleavened. Now, again, as he pointed out in this morning's message, if we eat something leavened, he says, you're removed and kicked out of Israel, out of the camp of Israel. But it doesn't say if you miss. So if, for instance, we fast during the days of unleavened bread, I want to fast, I want to draw close to God, I want to focus on something particular to get it out of my life. I've asked that question, well, is it wrong to fast during a day of unleavened bread? Because if you don't eat the bread, does that mean now you've sinned? And you're fasting to draw close to God, but now you've sinned because you've missed a piece. Whereas Mr. Johnson brought out, there are countries that don't have bread, and bread isn't their staple meal, where it was with the children of Israel. That was a staple meal, barley bread. And they would eat that bread, and so he said, you shall eat bread, and it has to be unleavened. I've also brought out the point, and we were talking about this earlier too, and it says, well, it says, you shall eat unleavened bread. And we should. But is it a sin? Because you go to the Ten Commandments, it says, you shall work 6 days and do all your labor. So if you only work 5 days a week and you don't work Sundays, are you sinning on Sunday? No, we don't sin. When you do your work, you do it within that 6 day period, but the seventh day is something different. It's separated. So he says here, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day, and some have always, I say always, over the years that question has been brought up again and again. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. And people have said, we shouldn't do leaven before the days of unleavened bread. It has to be done on the first day. Well, then you would enter the day already having leaven in your home. That word on in the Hebrew is before. Or in order of importance, the way you do these days, the way you keep these days, in order of importance, first you remove leavening from your home. Because if your home is supposed to be de-leavened, and if you find leaven or if you have leaven in your home, there's a penalty for that. So it says, on or before these that first day, you remove the leavening from your home. Whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh, that person will be cut off from Israel. He said, if you eat it, if you eat something leavened, and that's the whole purpose of de-leavening, is so you have nothing leavened in your home, so you don't eat it. So we watch, we're vigilant, we remove all the leavening from our homes or everything we can find that's leavened. And sometimes you find, oh, I missed something. Sometimes you find, oh, I made a mistake, especially if you're traveling or eating out. I was mentioning at lunch this week, I was going through Costco. And most of you have been through Costco, or I assume you have. But when you go into Costco, they have samples. I was going through and I took a sample of something and walked on down the aisle and I stopped and I'm like, wait a minute, what did I eat? Not thinking about, okay, I'm like, oh, okay, it was chocolate-covered macadamia in that. That's fine. That's unleavened. But I had to think to myself because, like, did I eat something leavened? I just ate something. Did I take a sample of something I shouldn't have? Fortunately, there's another area and they had pretzels and cheese and I was like, nah, I'm good. We're going to have plenty of that on Sunday. But I had to catch myself. Did I do something wrong? So we watch. We're vigilant. We don't want leavening to be a part of our life. And we don't want to ingest leavening. Physically, spiritually, we should have that same aspect of sin. We don't want to taste. We don't want to take in even just a little bit. Because a little bit will leaven the whole person. A little bit of sin will cause the whole person to be contaminated. I'm sure we'll hear stories from one another, if we haven't already over lunch, of sometimes things that happen. In our first year, when we came into the church, we came in the spring, so we were newbies, brand new, we were excited. We're going to keep the days of unleavened bread, and I think I've mentioned this here before, it's a holy day, so we got to eat out. And my mom took us for pancakes. And as we ate the pancakes, we had just gotten our plates and started in. And, of course, she had the shocked look on her face. She tells us to stop. We can't eat the pancakes. We were learning. We were new. But she realized, here we're keeping the days of unleavened bread. So we were celebrating by eating out and eating pancakes. It says verse 16, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day, which we're keeping today, there shall be a holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. He said, on the holy day you can prepare your food. So you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month of the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening, sundown tonight. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. That's why you shouldn't eat leavened bread or leavening. No leaven shall even be found in your houses, since whoever eats leavened, that same person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or native of the land. Oh, I was just visiting and I ate leaven. Well, sorry. Move along. It's wrong. He says, you shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. Listen closely. The last 7 days that we have been keeping have not been the days of de-leavening. You may think, well, what do you mean? It's not the days of de-leavening. We de-leavened before the days of unleavened bread. We go into it having already, in order of importance, removed leavening from our homes. And leavening should not have been found in our homes, our vehicles, whatever we have. within our gates. But it hasn't been the days of deleavening. We spent this week avoiding sin, avoiding leavening. But if all we've done is avoid leaven or avoid sin, then we're still missing something. If we do everything possible to get leaven out, even physically, you say, no, I've de-leavened, I didn't eat anything leavened, is there still leaven in your home? The answer is yes. You think, well, no, I've done everything. May not be in your pantry, may not be in your cupboards, may not be a piece of toast behind a dresser, may not be food that you found that you forgot to check or thought for sure it didn't have. And there's been years where we've had items where we know this isn't leavened, and you look and it's like, years ago it wasn't leavened, now it is. Now it has leavening in it. We have to continue to check. But it's not in the fridge, it's not in the freezer, it's not in the vanity. I found in the vanity under my bathroom sink 1 year. I de-leavened, I took everything out, cleaned, put it all back, and I was using baking soda to brush my teeth with, and I opened up the door on the first day of unleavened bread, and I'm like, I've got a box of leavening. Even though it's for my teeth, it's a box of leavening that could be used for leavening bread. It's wrong. So careful to clean and to remove, but didn't see what was right in front of me. Again, there's lessons that we learn. But it's not from your vanity, and it may not even be in your cars. Not least that you can see. Something we have to spiritually be on guard for, and again, it's something that is an important lesson from this, especially in the world that we live in. We can remove all the sin from our lives, get the leavening out, focus on removing sin, focus on removing the negative things from our life. But sin is all around us. And even just stepping into it a little bit or being enticed by it, it's around us. I want to read a study that was done on the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It's called The Feast of Unleavened Bread by Lord Elias Scalier. He said, not only was Israel required to abstain from eating leaven, but they were also required to remove the leaven from their habitations. This put great pressure on the women of the house, since yeast is airborne. Yeast is airborne. Now today, we go baking soda, baking powder, yeast, remove all the leaven. They didn't have in Israel a shelf with baking powder, yeast, and baking soda where they could just go choose and I'm going to make bread today, here's my baking powder. It says yeast is airborne. Everything in the house had to be cleaned, and actually the job of removing leaven from the home was easier when houses were constructed in the manner that they were. In ancient days, the Israelites understood the separation from leaven to be totally removed from it. They understood that if they had leaven in their houses during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that they would be cut off from Israel. When it was time for the feast, a housewife could no longer keep her starter mixture, and she had to destroy it. They had a starter mixture. I don't know how many of you have ever done sourdough and kept a sourdough starter. Pretty potent. Kind of nasty looking if you cook with that, but it makes wonderful bread. Nice sourdough bread. They had a starter mixture, and they would destroy it. After the Feast of Unleavened Bread, she would have to put out her flour and water mixture. She would make the flour and water and set it out and wait for airborne yeast to land on it and cause it to rise. That's how they started each year. They didn't run down to 7-Eleven or to Aldi's to get more yeast or baking soda. They would set it out, and airborne leavening, airborne yeast, would land on it. At that point, she would then have her starter to bake bread throughout the year. And if you've ever made the bread, when you make it, you use that in your dough, and you always keep a little bit out, or you pinch some of that dough off and put it into the starter jar to keep the process going. After the Feast of Unleavened Bread, again, she would put it out and wait for that airborne yeast to land on it. A tradition and very welcome gift for a new bride would be a batch of starter that so she could immediately begin baking bread. So we have to consider airborne leaven. And when we think of today's society and spiritually speaking, the things that are around us, Satan is the prince of the power of the air. It's airwaves, it's thinking, it's media, it's conversation. It is airborne leaven all around us. One thing in the analogy that we don't do is after these days, well, now these days are over, so I'm going to put my mind out and let it be leavened by that airborne yeast again. That was a physical lesson, and they needed to do that to be able to make bread again through the year. Spiritually speaking, when we leave these days, we don't go back to, oh, yes, it's around us, but it's only a little bit, or only a little bit here isn't going to hurt. We continue to stay unleavened. Another article, Dream a Little Dream of Bread by Gil Marks. When people began to cook their breads on griddles and skillets, first on clay and later in metal, they eliminated most of the impurities. Meanwhile, airborne wild yeast, probably from nearby date palms. Different plants have yeast, natural yeast that come from them. He says, probably from nearby date palms, occasionally found its way into the wheat batter, giving birth to leavened bread. And after cooks learned how to preserve these unicellular fungi in starter doughs, yeast breads became the favorite of those who could afford wheat. And barley bread served as a staple for the masses, while the upper class enjoyed leavened wheat bread. Now, we most today would prefer the wheat bread over barley bread. I like barley. I like the marbled breads. Wheat bread is something that's wonderful, especially if you have whole wheat yeast rolls that have been proofing in the kitchen and you can smell that yeast, especially when they're in the oven baking. You take that yeast roll and you pull it apart. I'll get you ready for it tonight and tomorrow. Pull that yeast roll apart and fresh butter just as it's come out of the oven. The smell of yeast and the smell of that fresh bread. But he said, that's what happened. They would enjoy this. And it happened because of this airborne yeast, probably from these date palms. And they just waited for it to begin. If you've ever proofed your yeast before you make breads or doughs, and you pour the water on the yeast, you put your sugar so it has something to feed on, your salt, your olive oil, and you just watch it start bubbling. And usually when it's doubled in size, that's when you begin to mix in your flour. But it starts bubbling and moving. So they would lay out this bread, and when it began to pick up this airborne yeast, they could see it becoming active. And even if it only had a little bit, if they mixed it into the dough, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Eventually, it would have enough yeast within it to bake with and to continue keeping their starter. But leaven is all around us. It's in the air. It's in the world spiritually. And we have to continue to be aware of it. This isn't just the days of being leaven-free. It is for us being unleavened, and we should use this as a springboard to stay unleavened. So what has the process been, and what is the lesson? Exodus 34, verse 18. Exodus 34 and verse 18. The Feast of Unleavened Bread you shall keep. And he says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread as I commanded you in the appointed time in the month of Abib. For in the month of Abib you came out from Egypt. You left sin behind. And for us, for 7 days we have put sin away from us, behind us, got it out. He said, you came out of Egypt. It says the Feast of Unleavened Bread you shall keep. And this word keep is a Hebrew word, shamar, according to Strong's. It means to put a hedge about, as with thorns. You want to keep things away from it. You want to keep things out. And so not just put a hedge about something. People put hedges around their lawn, and if they're low enough, you know, you see people jump over them or go through them. But it says to put a hedge about as with thorns. You want to keep it out. That's what these days mean. To keep, to protect the days of unleavened bread, keep the leaven out, not only for these 7 days, but spiritually keep it out. It means to protect, to attend to beware, to observe, to preserve. That means you continue holding on to something. To regard, to reserve, and to watch. Have you put a hedge about these days? Are you going to hold on to everything you've learned and use it throughout the year? Not letting anything, not letting that airborne leaven from Satan get to us. Have you taken these days in high regard to preserve and to protect them? And are we going to do that as we go from here? Will we continue to watch for spiritual leaven? Now, it may not be on our minds as much because physically, and I grew up in the church, physically, you feel, oh, if I eat leaven, that's bad. Spiritually, people don't quite have that same flair, the same drive to, oh, spiritually, I cannot. I will not. I'm not going to let this affect me. I'm not going to let this even come into my mind. Physically, people get into the point, oh, it's got to be totally leaven-free. Don't touch any leaven. Don't be tempted by leaven. But the spiritual aspects are the same, and we have to continue with the spiritual lessons afterward. We don't want to let it back in. And again, physical leaven, we do. After the days of unleavened bread, physically we can go back to eating bread. Go back to eating pizza, flour tortillas, all of those nice things we like to have. Spiritually, we do not let it back in, and we do not want to be attracted to the things of this world. I want to go to the book of Genesis, but as we prepare to go there, I want to look at Lot when he was commanded to leave the city. He was trying to get his family out of the city. And in this lesson, I want you to think about this. Do we quickly try to get away from sin? If we see it, do we go, well, no, I know that's wrong, but I know when I need to stop, or I know where I need to draw the line, or where the limits are? Or do we quickly get away from it? It's like Joseph, who, when he was tempted, she grabbed his coat and he ran out in the buff as fast as he could to get away from sin. Do we try to get away from it quickly? After these days are over, are we going to let our guard down and accept what is around us? Or are we going to keep that frame of mind where we see sin around us and we quickly get away from it? It's important that we maintain the things that we have learned. All right, let's go to Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19 and verse 14. And we'll see what happened with Lot. Genesis 19 and verse 14. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who had married his daughters, and said, "Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But to his son-in-laws, he seemed to be joking. Son-in-law said, "You've got to be kidding. What do you mean, get out of the city? Nothing wrong with this city." He seemed to be joking. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife, your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." Verse 16, while he lingered. Now, if I had an angel appear to me and said, "You need to get out of your house, get out of this city because the whole place is going to be destroyed. Take your family with you, protect them because this is the end of the city. This is the end of the place where you live. You've got to get out." I don't think I would linger, as it says here. While he lingered, the men, or the angels, took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hand of his two daughters. And again, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and they set him outside the city. The angels actually took him by the hand and said, You're not going to linger. God said, get out. And they pulled them and led them out of the city. He wasn't going to wait around for them to take their time to consider, to accept. He told them to get away from sin. And how often do we see sin around us and we linger? Well, I know it should be dealt with, but it's not my problem. Or I know it's something that I shouldn't do, but it's really not that bad compared to what other people do. Or coming up with excuses. He told them to get away from sin and not to linger. Verse 17, so it came to pass when they brought them outside, he said, escape for your life. He said, I am telling you something so serious, if you don't get out of here, you will die. If we don't get out from sin, sin will kill you as well. The soul that sins, it will die. He was warning them, get out of the city, you will die. Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. He said, you'll be destroyed with them, even if you're not a part of it. If you're there and you're accepting it, you will be destroyed. You say, well, but that's the city was going to be destroyed. This society and this age will be as well. And we understand the plan of God. We understand the prophecies of what is going to come on this world and what is going to come as the time of Jacob's trouble on this nation. We know things are going to be destroyed. People are going to be destroyed. And God has warned us when the time comes and said, you better go. Mentally, we prepare ourselves ahead of time. Mentally, we already should be in that frame of mind where I've been getting away from sin as often as I can. Now, physically, I have to remove myself from this age. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Mr. Johnson mentioned this in the sermon this morning. I want to look at Paul directly dealing with a problem. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 1. He says, it is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you. He's talking to the church. Now, it has happened in the past where ministers have stood up in congregations of several hundred and said, I know there's adultery going on in this congregation. Of course, everybody's eyes are like, oh, I thought the church was perfect. And that's what Paul was doing here. He said, I've heard. I've come to this understanding. It has been reported that there is sexual immorality among you. Such as sexual immorality is not even among the Gentiles, that a man has his father's wife. So he's talking to the church and he goes, this is in the church. He said, this is taking place. There is a sin going on, and the church knew about it. Verse 2, he says, are puffed up. What did he mean by you're puffed up? And have not rather mourned, he said, you haven't looked at this and said, oh, this is a terrible thing that's happening in the church. You have not rather mourned that he who has done such deeds might be taken away from you. You are puffed up. He says to the congregation, you're puffed up. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says of this word puffed up, he said it is puffed up with wisdom and knowledge, and that the eloquence of their favorite teachers at a time when you ought to be mourning at the scandal caused to religion by incest. He says Paul mourned because they did not mourn. He said they weren't upset about it. He says we ought to mourn over the transgressions of others and repent of your own. We're not just out for ourselves. Okay, well, I've got my problems. I'm trying to overcome them. I know other people have problems, but that doesn't involve me. He says we should mourn over the transgressions of others and repent of our own. There is a time when we, even as a congregation, when we have troubles, when we have things that are happening within the church, we have to say, no, that can't happen. That is sin. He says in verse 3, "For indeed, as absent from the body but present in the spirit, I've already judged, as though I were present, him who has done this deed." He said, I didn't have to come here to make a decision. I've already judged this. I've already judged it. I already know what needs to be done. He says in verse 4, "In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, when you are gathered together, along with my spirit, with the power of the Lord Jesus Christ," he says, "deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that his spirit might be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus." He said, deliver one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. I've heard people say, well, I don't agree with that. Well, this is what God gave us. These scriptures were inspired to be given to us. He said, if there's somebody in a congregation that is causing sin and it's going to spread, deliver one to Satan, he says, for the destruction of the flesh. He doesn't say, deliver him to Satan so we never have to look at him again. No, it says, for the destruction of the flesh, that his spirit might be saved. The hope is that he would come to repentance, and later this individual did and was allowed to come back. But notice verse 6, he says, "Your glorying is not good." He told them already, you are puffed up. You've got an attitude and you have a mindset that you're accepting this. You're condoning it. He said, "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" Physically, a little bit of leaven from a date palm can eventually leaven the whole lump and start a yeast batch or mixture that could be used the entire year. Spiritually, when sin comes into our life, a little bit, and thinking, well, I can retain a little bit, I've got this under control, a little bit will leaven the entire lump. And if it's in a congregation, it will leaven a congregation. It's like a bad potato or a bad apple in a bunch. I don't know if you've ever done that, but the worst thing is, and it's worse, I think, with potatoes. Because potatoes have this horrible smell when they're rotten. And you reach into a bin of potatoes and you stick your thumb through one, and you instantly smell that and you realize, ugh. And you look around and it started spreading to the others already. He says a little bit of leaven, a little bad apple, little bad potato is going to destroy the batch. So what do we do physically? If you're in there and you see a bad potato, you take it and throw it away. And it keeps the others from going bad, at least as quickly. He says, "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" A sin that's covered up will grow. Now, the church's approach was, it's not my problem. They looked at it and they go, well, yeah, we know what's going on, but not my problem. I'm focused on my own sin. It is their problem. When someone is blatantly sinning and it's affecting the congregation, or the congregation comes, as in here, his sin wasn't, oh, now everybody else is starting to do that. But it was affecting the congregation because they knew of sin and didn't do anything with it. But when they became aware of it, it says they were puffed up. They had an attitude of, well, it's not my problem. I'm not going to approach it. But it had to be dealt with. Verse 7, he says, "Therefore, purge out the old leaven." He says, remove the old leaven. He wasn't talking about, all right, everybody go home and if you had leavening that's old, get rid of it. No, he says, we've just come through these days. Purge out the old leaven. Purge out the old way of life. Purge out those sins that are still lingering and hanging on to an individual. Purge out the old leaven that you may be a new lump, a lump without leavening. Since you truly are unleavened, for indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. He said, you're unleavened because of that sacrifice, but you're unleavened. You're a new lump. And you cannot allow sin to puff you up again. You can't allow sin to settle and begin to go to work. This day has to do with the days that we have been keeping. What Paul was telling them is talking about leavening, but talking about the effects of it, whether it be an individual sin or individual leaven, or whether it be a congregational leaven. We cannot condone sin, and we can't think, well, it's not my problem. We're told when we have another brother who is suffering from a fault, we go to him and we tell him his fault one to another. Is it our goal to avoid sin? And hopefully that's not just the only thing we take from the days of unleavened bread. Okay, I've learned how to avoid sin. Or is it to follow the right path? Is it to become righteous? Is it to be unleavened and stay unleavened? We're called for a purpose. We're called to change. We're called to become something. The goal is to become what we're supposed to be, not just avoid making mistakes. God didn't call out Israel and said, I want you to avoid being like them or avoid making mistakes. No, he said, I want you to be my people. I want you to be the children that I'm working with. I want you to be separate. I want you to be an example for other nations. I want you to be holy. And in fact, even the clean and unclean meats, he says, do this because I want you to be clean. I want you to be holy, to be separated. If we're only avoiding sin and we're not being changed, we're still missing the mark. One of the definitions of sin is to miss the mark. If you are just avoiding sin, but you're not changed, and you're not having a change of your character, we're still missing the mark. We're still in our sins. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Mr. Diaz covered this in his sermonette. It's interesting. I had that planned for this as well. Because it's hard to come out of something and see something and focus on it without looking at particular verses that go from here. What do you do after you have the knowledge? What do you do after you have the Spirit of God? He says, I beseech you, brethren, therefore, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. He said, this isn't going to be easy. It isn't just don't eat leavening for 7 days and then now we're done and go back to the way we lived before. He said, no, you are to be unleavened. You're to change. We become a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. When we were baptized, when we made that covenant relationship and we accepted the blood of Jesus Christ, he says, now you are holy and acceptable. You have been cleansed. We do that when we go through the Passover service. He said, if you accept these things, you are unleavened. We have become that. But he says, you become a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable. And how do we do that? He said, by the renewal of your mind. Renewing the mind. And don't be conformed to this world. Don't try to fit in. Don't try to go to work and say, well, I don't want anybody to know I'm a Christian. I don't want to stir anything up. I don't want people to know, oh, I'm taking off Friday because I've got a holy day. So I've got an event I've got to go to. I'm not going to be able to work. It's not that we avoid letting people know what we're doing, but renewing the mind, being transformed. So he says, do not be conformed to this world. Don't try to fit in, but be transformed. That word transformed means completely changed, to go through a metamorphosis and become something different. Be completely changed into something else. That doesn't happen by just avoiding sin. There's a lot of good people in the world who try to avoid sin, but they're still in their sins. He said, be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. What's good and acceptable and perfect will of God is not what we avoid. Those are things that we put on. Those are things that we carry with us after we have gone through the process of being cleansed. Clark commentary says, by the renewing of your mind, let the inward change produce the outward. We just don't get rid of the leavening around us and go, okay, I'm clean. Let the inward change produce the outward. He said, where the spirit, temper, and disposition of the mind are not renewed, the outward change is of but little worth and is short standing. Lesson number two. These days are a sign. It's not something that we go through these days and we say, okay, another year down, it's done. They are a sign. God has placed His name on us. We understand what these days picture and how they are the basis for our personal change and the basis of what every human being is going to go through when they go through the conversion process. These days are a sign. God has placed His name on us. He calls us His people. Number 6 tells us, speak to Aaron and his sons and say, this is the way that you shall bless the children of Israel, and say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face to shine on you and to be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. So they shall put My name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. He said they will put My name on them. God puts His name on what belongs to Him. And He said, this is My nation. This is Israel is to become My people. And He put His name on them. We still carry that name today. It is the Church of God. Years ago when we bought this particular lectern, we didn't always have this one. We have a smaller one here over to the side. We used that for a while, and then it went to Bakersfield. We bought the lectern, and then, of course, they sent us the signs, and it's nice to be able to put the sign on there, not just because we're webcasting, but we put a sign on there because this belongs to the church. It's property of the church. When we bought this lectern, there's a little story behind that. We were in need of a bigger lectern, something a little bit wider and something we'd put our notes on, something we could use at the Feast of Tabernacles. And this lectern I found online for $350. It was an $800 lectern. It had been specially made for a church. And it was advertised for $350. And the guy says, it's never been used. And we're asking $350 for it. Well, I had budgeted $250 from the church budget at the end of the year. We budget for the next year. I'd budgeted $250. And I said, would you take $250? And he says, yes, I'll take it. So we ended up getting it for $250. When I got there, I understood why it was never used. I arrived at the house. He said, he had told me on the phone, the church made this for me and we've never used it. And I thought, that's kind of odd. I wonder why he never used it. And when I got there, he opened the garage door and I saw him walk out, and he was standing next to the lectern, and it was a little Italian man who was probably about this tall. And I realized they built him a nice big lectern, but way bigger than he was. He said, I've just never used it. And I didn't want to say, well, yeah, I can see why you never used it. You'd have to build a little bench or step on the back end of it to go along with it. But we put our name on it. It belonged to the church. We have our name on the lectern that we were using in Bakersfield for a while. We put our name on it. It belongs to the church. And we feel that's a very nice thing. We've got our name on it. Nobody's going to mistake, oh, was that ours or theirs? It's got our name on it. God said, I want to place My name on Israel. They are so important to Me that I want to place My name on them. And He wanted the same. He wanted ownership. Now, we're told you were bought with a price. We belong because of that sacrifice that we accepted. I'm going to go back to Deuteronomy. We're going to spend some time reading through the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 11. And I'm going to read through these verses, and I'm going to maybe comment briefly. But I want to go through this particular story. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 1. Therefore, you shall love the Lord your God and keep His charge, His statutes, His judgments, His commandments always. Know today that I do not speak with your children who have not known and who have not seen, Remember, those individuals who came out of Egypt were not allowed to go into the promised land. They let the next generation. And he said, I do not speak with your children who have not known or have not seen. He was talking to them. The chastening of the Lord, his greatness and his mighty hand and his outstretched arm, his signs and his acts, which he did in the midst of Egypt to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to all his land. And he did to the army of Egypt, and to the horses and the chariots, and how he made the waters of the Red Sea overflow them as they pursued you, and how the Lord has destroyed them to this day. What he did for you in the wilderness until you came to this place, and what he did to Dathan and Abiram, and the sons of Eliab, and the sons of Reuben, and how the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, their households, their tents, their substances, that was their possessions in the midst of Israel. If he would have swallowed them up, then you got people going, oh, this belonged to Dathan, this belonged to Abiram, I've got his stuff. No, he said he destroyed it all. There was nothing left of them. But your eyes have seen every great act of the Lord which he did. He said, you physically witnessed the miracles. Therefore you shall keep every commandment which I command you today, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land which you cross over to possess. And you shall prolong your days in the land which the Lord swore to give to your fathers, to them and their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. For the land which you go to possess is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you sowed your seed and waited or watered it by foot and as a vegetable garden. But the land which you cross over to possess is a land with hills and valleys and drinks water from the rains of heaven. The land of the Lord, of the land which the Lord your God cares. The eyes of the Lord your God are always on it, from the beginning of the year to the very end of the year. It shall be that if you earnestly obey my commandments, which I command you today, to love the Lord your God and serve him with all your heart, with all your soul, then I will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early rain, the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil. I will send grass to your fields to feed your livestock, and that you may eat, that they may eat and be filled. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived, and you turn aside to serve other gods and worship them. Lest the Lord's anger be aroused against you, and he shut up the heavens, that there be no rain, and the land yield no produce, and that you perish quickly from the good land which the Lord is giving you. Therefore you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign on your hand. He said, everything that I have taught you, the law that I have given you, I want you to bind it on as a sign on your hand, and that they may be frontlets in your eyes. When you, everything that you put your hand to do and everything you think about needs to include what God has given to us and gave to the children of Israel. You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. It should consume every part of your life, not just, I'm a Sabbath Christian. I'm a Seventh-day Christian. We need to be all the time Christian. He said, you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates, that your days and the days of your children may be multiplied in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, like the days of the heavens above the earth. For if you carefully keep all of the commandments which I command you, and to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to hold fast to him, then the Lord will drive out all of these nations from before you, and will dispossess greater and mightier nations than yourselves. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. From the wilderness of Lebanon to the rivers, to the river Euphrates, even to the western sea, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand against you. The Lord your God will put dread of you and the fear upon all the land where you tread, just as he said to you. Behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you this day, and a curse if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I commanded you today to go after other gods which you have not known. Now it shall be when the Lord your God has brought you into the land which you go to possess, that you shall put the blessing of Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal. Are they not on the other side of the Jordan, toward the setting sun in the land of the Canaanites, who dwell in the plain opposite of Gilgal, beside the terebinth trees of Moreh? For you will cross over the Jordan and go in to possess the land which the Lord your God has given you, and you will possess it and you will dwell in it. He said, I'm giving it to you. And you shall be careful to observe. Just as God said, we keep these days of unleavened bread. We don't just put a hedge about them and keep them for the 7 days. 7 days you shall keep them. But we preserve them through the year and hopefully preserve the lessons that we've learned. You shall carefully observe all the statutes and judgments which I have set before you this day. God's holy days are listed as high days or high Sabbaths. And just as we read the verses earlier where it says, these are my feasts. The first one is the Sabbath. And God calls the Sabbath a sign of his people. God says, you are mine because you keep the Sabbath. And he says, you are mine because you keep the holy days. He said, I'm putting a sign on you that says you belong to me. Exodus chapter 31. Exodus 31 and verse 13. Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13. Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths, plural, and he's not talking about one Sabbath every 7 days. That's part of it, but he says, my Sabbaths you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations. He said, there's a sign. There's something that says, I belong to God. Not going to be swayed. Not going to be pulled away from it. God's sign is on me. And he says, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. He said, you keep the Sabbath and you have that stamp put on you that says you belong to God, so that you know that it is God who set you apart. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done for the 6 days, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, surely he shall be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. There are signs where God says, I have put my name on them, just as he commanded to be put on Israel, where he says, there's a sign that says, you are my people. Something that identifies you. And he said, it's a sign of the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Verse 18, when he made an end of speaking with him on Mount Sinai, he gave Moses 2 tablets of testimony, tables of stone, written with the finger of God. Number 3, these days are a picture of deliverance. Not just what happened historically and a deliverance from Egypt. These days are a picture of deliverance, and it pictures our deliverance, and even it is a picture of salvation. Last Saturday night, the movie Ten Commandments were on, and after we got home, after the high day, I was flipping channel, and I was going to flip on news, and one of the news channels instead had Ten Commandments playing, and I hadn't seen that in years, and ended up sitting up, it's a 4 or 5 hour movie. Ended up watching until 11:45 on Saturday night. But it was interesting watching that again and thinking about the physical aspects and what they went through and what these days mean to us. But these days are a picture of deliverance. We're watching them being delivered from Israel, or from Egypt rather. Watching Israel being delivered. Watching them come out. And watching them come out with a high hand. And watching how quickly, as soon as they found out they were being chased. Those stories are funny. Watching the older movies, and the women are laying on their side by the feet of Moses and crying out, what's going to happen to us? Others are running around and screaming. Exodus chapter 13. Exodus chapter 13. Says they took their journey from Succoth and camped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light, and so as to go by day and by night. That's a continual journey. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. Going to Exodus 14 and verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they may turn and camp before Pi-Heroth, between Migdol and the sea, and opposed Baal-Zephon, that you shall camp before the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered in the land, and the wilderness has closed them in. He was getting reports of where the children of Israel were, and he goes, oh, they're cut off by the sea. They have nowhere to go. I can go destroy them right now, or I can go take them back as captives. He says they are bewildered by the land. Kind of like, they've spent the last 7 days crossing the desert, and they've got a heat stroke because now they're caught. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. So, verse 4, he says, I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them. And I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made ready his chariots. He took his people with him. He also took 600 choice chariots. You know, it's hard for us to imagine what it's like with a team of horses or even a horse or two. And 600 chariots. 600 chariots. So he says 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt with captains over each one of them. So we don't know how many chariots altogether, but 600 of the choice chariots, 600 of his best warriors, and all the chariots, and each one had a captain in them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh the king, and he pursued the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with boldness. They went out with a high hand. They went out excited and ready to obtain the land that God had promised them. They went out victorious. So the Egyptians pursued them, the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and army, overtook them, camping beside Pi-Heroth, before Baal-Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid. They just saw all of the plagues against the gods of Egypt. Now, it says they're very afraid. The children of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, because there was no graves in Egypt, have you taken us out in the wilderness to die? Why have you dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Why did you take us out of sin? We had things when we were in sin. It was pleasurable, at least for a season. Is it not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we can serve the Egyptians? Leave us alone in sin. We're happy here. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Really? Notice an important statement in verse 13. Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. For the Lord will fight with you, and you shall hold your peace. The people feared what was going on around them, but they didn't need to. They had already forgot quickly that God was the one delivering them, that God was their protector. They didn't trust God. They started getting nervous and worried about their protection. And even in the movie, you see them frantically running and screaming and not knowing what to do because, oh, we can see chariots afar off. In the movie, they hear a noise and somebody says, "Is that thunder?" "No, it's the chariots of Egypt." And they all start freaking out. Moses says, "Do not be afraid. Stand still." Those words, "stand still," Moses was saying, quit running around and worrying. Quit running around like a chicken with its head cut off. Quit just running around carelessly, not thinking that you have a God that has brought you here to this point. Exodus 14, verse 25. "He took off their chariot wheels, and so he drove that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, 'Let us flee from the face of Israel. The Lord fights for them.'" It's interesting. The Egyptians are going, "God is fighting for them." And the Israelites are going, "We're going to die. We don't have a God to protect us." They said, "The Lord fights for them," or fights against the Egyptians. "The Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the seas,' and the waters came back upon the Egyptians, on the chariots, on the horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the seas, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth." It wasn't the Reed Sea. It wasn't just a short little bit of water that they were crossing. "The waters came back together until the levels that they were before." And it says, and while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. "So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And when the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaohs that came into the sea after them, not so much as one of them remained." Every single one of the 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt, all of those who pursued them were drowned. "But the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord God had done. And so the people feared the Lord, and they believed the Lord and his servant Moses." For a little while. We know, oh, Moses delays his coming. We'll make a new God. But at that point, they feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Their enemy was gone. Who is our enemy? We have just come out. We have been delivered. And you can bet, soon as we come out of these days of unleavened bread, Satan and his army is going to come after you. He is going to try to attack. Sometimes it's not necessarily even just Satan and his army. Sometimes it's the old man. Wants to come back up. They are gone through what these days picture. Just as the final bit of Egypt was totally destroyed. At that point, you know, they had left Egypt. They were freed from Egypt. They had their freedom. They made their exodus. They left. But they were still being pursued. At this point, it says it destroyed all of them, and they saw no more the Egyptians. God is our deliverer. And just as Israel, if we have been baptized, we've gone through a watery grave. We've renewed that covenant at Passover. We've focused 7 days of keeping leavening out of our lives and putting on purity, cleanness, being unleavened. God is our deliverer. The Lord fights for you. Does God fight your battles? Sometimes it's hard to let go and let God fight a battle for you. Do you let God fight your battles? Or do you, like the children of Israel, run around screaming, saying, "How could this happen? What's going to happen to me?" When God has been there the entire time. He says, "Cast your cares upon me." The waters came down. The enemy was destroyed. We have left Egypt. We have left spiritual Egypt. But these days are something that we carry on now. And just as he said, when you leave here, when you go to the promised land, continue to keep what is right. Continue to become a changed nation. And I will continue to bless you. Why don't we believe any better than the children of Israel when it comes to trials and difficulties and armies or whatever it is that we consider our trials to be as they pursue us? God has led us to freedom. He is leading us to salvation, just as He led the children of Israel out of Egypt. He led them to freedom, but then He destroyed the enemy as well. It is a journey, it's something that we go through, but we don't need to wander 40 years in the wilderness because of disobedience. He says, put sin out of your lives, put leaven out of your lives for the 7 days. But we are to be unleavened. And we should eat a little bit of leavening, unleavened bread each day. Should eat that unleavened bread as a reminder of what these days picture. But spiritually, it is even more important that you focus on what are the true spiritual lessons from these days and how can I hold on to those? How can I put a hedge about those and continue keeping those? Remember as we go from here, these days are more than just putting out leavening. It is becoming unleavened and staying unleavened. These days are a sign between God and His people, just as it was with Israel. And He said, I am putting a sign on you. I have brought you out. I've cleansed you. I have given you my law. I want you as my people. And He does us as well. And these days picture deliverance. Deliverance from sin. Deliverance from physical sin that we have committed, sins that are past. But it's also a process of deliverance where eventually, through the fulfillment of the other holy days and what they mean, we obtain salvation. The day pictures deliverance, but it also pictures deliverance of salvation. And again, these are things that we need to remember as we conclude the days of unleavened bread.